Coming up, the Brooklyn Nets receive positive news on the Kevin Durant injury front. Will he, though, push to come back before the All-Star game? And how does his health and the potential playoff push for Brooklyn impact what the Nets and Sean Marks do at the trade deadline? We break it all down next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yes, my friends, it is the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. Not seen over there is one Doug Norrie, or heard for that matter, but he is the owner and operator of DFSR. For all your daily fantasy sports rankings from DraftKings to FanDuel, he's got you covered. I'm Adam Marnbrick, breaking down the New York football Giants right into the offseason on the One Giant podcast with my boy Andy Mack. We thank you for making us your first listen of the day, free on all those great platforms, and let you know and today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. And where we get started is taking a look at a couple of things. First and foremost, the Kevin Durant injury update that has everyone at least feeling positive that there isn't any setbacks. He's starting to get a little bit of running and on-court working. And we'll touch on that a little bit deeper in a second. And then we'll take a look at the trade deadline. Some of the rumors already saw Rui Hachimura goes from the Wizards to the Lakers. So two teams in the Lakers and the Nets that seemingly felt like they were in similar waters at the start of this season. One of them, the Lakers, has now made a move. They're trying to push in that direction. And we'll break down a little bit deeper where some of these teams now are starting to signal and what the price point could be to improve the Brooklyn Nets roster, specifically around Serge Ibaka, and of course, Naz Reid from the Timberwolves being mentioned in the most recent set of circles. That being the case, though, we said at the top there, Kevin Durant and the injury update. So he's back on the court. He's doing work. They like what he's doing. You're going to see a little bit more activity from him over the course of this week and is set to be reevaluated in two more weeks. Now, there were a couple of quotes from him around wanting to be a part of all the big events, meaning the All-Star game that'll be coming up, obviously, in that break. I, in this moment, find it hard to think that if in 2 weeks, and we look at the schedule right now, that he gets reevaluated, and we feel good. It's all glowingly positive. So there's nothing, there's no negativity around the fact that it looks like he's progressing on the right path, and it's not going to be anything that lingers beyond what we assumed about that month-ish kind of timeline. Hasn't played. Last game was January 8th. So you add another couple weeks on here. It's the beginning of February. And obviously that large All-Star break, which falls right in and around, because we had talked about this previously. February 15th is the last game that the Nets will play against the Miami Heat. And then it's a 9-day layoff over that All-Star break before they come back on Friday, February 24th. So if you tack on the 2 weeks, you can start to say from the 23rd, 24th, you give it another couple of weeks. It's right in there around Phoenix, Chicago, Philadelphia, building up towards the All-Star break, potentially, that Kevin Durant will get reevaluated, and then we'll see where he stands. But if you're the Brooklyn Nets, shy of it being that he's 100% healthy and it's all good, if he were able to come back and play a couple of games before the All-Star break, great. Then playing in the All-Star game is fine. I do not see a world where his first step back onto the basketball court is going to be in the All-Star game. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when they reevaluate him. It also probably, if we're being honest, depends on how the Brooklyn Nets play. We know that later tonight they'll take on the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll be in on YouTube breaking down that post-game live. They're coming off of two wins over Utah and Golden State after losing those first four games without KD. So you have the 76ers, the Pistons, the Knicks, the Lakers, the Celtics, obviously, that matchup they just can't quite get over the hump with. And then you have those aforementioned Washington Wizards who traded away Rui Hachimura, but seem to be holding on to Kyle Kuzma. When you look over this length of the schedule, you just have to kind of sit there and say, well, if we win, let's put it in the context of take me all the way to February 13th and the Knicks, right? Or the 11th with Philadelphia for that meeting there. If over those four, 6, 8, 10 games that they have. Well, if the Nets go 6-4 over those 10, then maybe you're inspired to not push Kevin Durant back. Again, if he's ready to go, you get him out on the court a couple of games before the All-Star break. If you go 4-6, and then you put yourself in the combination where you're what? Would be 10 losses over his absence, right? And just 6 wins. So a 6-10 record without him. Then maybe you want to push, if he's healthy, to get those couple extra games before the All-Star break, because winning a couple more games could actually be significant. And then we know that deadline there is going to fall smack in February 7th after the Phoenix game. By the time they play on Thursday the 9th, the deadline will have passed. So also the decisions that they're going to make here are going to be predicated on that as well. I don't see any reason to push Kevin Durant. Again, the spectrum where maybe the team is struggling or just keeping their head above water, sure. But you have to take the big picture into account here. And as it stands right now, one of the things that we talked about when looking at the Brooklyn Nets and saying, what do they need to do in the absence of Kevin Durant? Well, a big part of it was just keep your head above water in the standings. Don't fall too far. Now, those first four losses were pretty brutal, but then they pick up the 2 wins in a row. And now they're sitting there with a game and a half up on Cleveland in the 4 seed still. And you can start to see it, right? They have 3.5 game lead over the Miami Heat, who are the 6 seed. And that was the benchmark that I had set. Don't fall below the 6 seed for whatever reason, because then you're only 1 or 2 steps away from talking about the play-in discussion and all that kind of nonsense. And coming out of the Kevin Durant injury, coming out of the All-Star break, you don't want to put this seismic pressure on. Well, we need to be winning 3 out of every 4 games for the next 2 or 3 weeks before we feel like we've solidified ourselves. So I think that that's a big part of it too. And honestly, these games, we mentioned Philadelphia twice in there, mentioned Boston in there too, right? So there are some big matchups, and the Miami Heat matchup next month on the 15th. That one is pretty darn huge for this team, because if you win it, you push them a little further away. We mentioned the Knicks in there as well. So all these things are going to make it possible for the Brooklyn Nets to stave off any real issues in the absence of Kevin Durant and be able to bring him back. The other part then that we're going to talk about is, what do you do between now and the trade deadline? Some things have already, the buzz is already happening here. I mean, we're you know, on the 25th of January, so you only have a week and a half before you really get into crunch time around the deadline. Teams have already signaled what they're going to want for certain players, what they're willing to let guys go for. And it starts to ask the question, and we've said this before, how all in are the Brooklyn Nets potentially going to go here? What is their breaking point? And who else is going to be competing for some of the same players that they're interested in? We take a look at Naz Reid, which has been a hot name coming out of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then also another connected to Kevin Durant, Serge Ibaka, who could be looking to find himself a new home and might not come with that big of a price tag. We'll dive into that next. But the first thing that we're going to do is go ahead and tell you about our friends over at FanDuel. That is because when you talk about getting excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On, it's because they're the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, by the way, that's even better, because they have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. If you are thinking about the NFL this weekend, you can go over right now. It is the conference championship games. You've got San Francisco going to Philadelphia. I'm a Giants guy. You can get 2.5 points for San Francisco at minus 105 over there, or on the money line at 120, plus 120 on the money line. I say go for it, friends. Not just because I want the Eagles to lose badly, but because San Francisco has that defense. Brock Purdy is no longer Mr. Irrelevant. Dive in on that, or the Bengals and the Kansas City Chiefs, man. You can get 104 plus for Kansas City on the money line. They're getting 1.5 at home. It's absolutely insane, and FanDuel has got you covered over there for whatever your needs may be going into this big NFL weekend. You can, of course, get it all over on the app that is safe, secure, and super easy to use. So, football fans, do not miss out. Place your first $5 bet, and you will get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOnNBA. That's right. You do your first $5 bet, and you're going to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Okay, so one of the things that Doug and I, we've touched on a couple of times, we said, what's more important, getting a defensive-minded member of the backcourt, adding someone that can supplement what Nicholas Claxton has done so well this year, being just the defensive stalwarts, the blocks, the offensive game that's now taking that next step in its evolution. But how do you make sure that you have that little bit of depth? How do you safeguard against the growth and expansion of Ben Simmons coming off the back injury, getting acclimated, and frankly, living up to expectations in some form or fashion? What has been interesting to me is when we talk about, and this one comes over from a lot of different people, have obviously been reporting on it from Shams, Sharania, also been reporting on it from Adrian Wojnarowski, but nice article over on Nets Daily from Net Income, which just kind of encapsulates all this stuff, pulls all the threads over. And it had been originally reported from Michael Scotto that the Timberwolves center Naz Reid has drawn interest from the Clippers and from the Nuggets, and also heard that the Nets have inquired about Reid, so there will be competition for him in Minnesota should Minnesota choose to move him, though the price for the upcoming free agent wouldn't be significant. So the reason why some people have brought him up over the last couple of weeks in the comments on YouTube, in our chat, et cetera, over on social, and a lot of times my hesitation was, and if you're Minnesota and you want to get the value for an impending free agent, I totally get it. But some of it was just to do with the health kind of the Minnesota Timberwolves and Rudy Gobert being in and out. And obviously you're waiting for Kat to get back onto the court. And I just wondered, what are they willing to do before they know how healthy they're going to be for the back stretch of this season? And Naz Reid has stepped in and played very well for them in their absence. And when you look over at the Western Conference and you see that the Timberwolves are sitting in the ninth spot, they're 24-25, like there's all these little factors. And maybe this season, because of Kat's injury, just isn't going to pan out quite the way Minnesota had originally hoped. So you go over, here's the things that I like about it. And I'll mention Serge Ibaka inside of this breath a little bit too, because I've always said this. If you're going to make a move, it's weird because with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, the construction of this current roster, which now has a lot more veterans, you brought in Royce O'Neal, TJ Warren, right? All of these guys to go along with Seth Curry, to go along with Joe Harris. You think that Sean Marks' approach might be going with more veteran experienced talent because those are guys that have been there and done that. And that's where the Serge Ibaka factor comes in. Why I like the idea of a Naz Reid is because 23 years old. And yes, he's going to be a free agent. But if you go and make the trade for him now, then that helps mitigate. Potentially, say you like him. Say he's a free agent target that Sean Marks has already identified, saying, hey, after this season, if Minnesota's not bringing them back, we'd love to get into the conversation with a player like this. Well, we know because of the cap constraints for the Nets, they wouldn't be able to walk into free agency and bring in a player at whatever dollar amount. It's why they've had to live in some of those lower levels. It's why they had to take chances on a Sumner, on a Warren, right? Low cost, maybe some high reward buys in the offseason. But if you have Naz Reid, well, then you get to negotiate with him underneath the Brooklyn Nets. So you can save yourself in that way. So if the Nets like him as being a complimentary piece to Nicholas Claxton, then I think it makes a lot of sense. And there's obviously versatility to his game as well. 6'9", 264, the versatility defensively is there. The size, the bulk. I mean, in a lot of ways, you could almost think about, not one-to-one-ing anything about this, other than you can think about Marcus Morris being a guy that has bulk. It's something that the Nets wanted to have a little bit more of, right? And Markieff Morris hasn't played a lot over the course of this season. So if you're just thinking about like the model of something that you want to bring in, someone that could play more physically on the defensive end, obviously, then Naz Reid is a guy that makes a lot of sense. And you've seen now in recent days how his minutes have slowly creeped down, probably in preparation potentially for him being traded here. But they put a showcase on there. Going back to the middle of January, the 14th, 16th, 18th, and 19th, over that four-game stretch, he played 28, 22, 26, and 22 minutes. He gave you 17, 7, 17, and 6 in terms of production from a scoring standpoint. And he also gave you the rebounds. Three out of those four games, he had 7 rebounds. And overall, he's averaging almost 5 on the season. But when you're giving him significant minutes, he's giving you 6, 7, 8 rebounds per game. I think it makes a lot of sense. And the other biggest factor when we talk about free throw shooting for him is going to be that on the season overall for Naz, he is currently shooting, I think it was, I want to make sure I got it right. He's shooting 69% on the season. He's a 72 nearly free throw shooter on the season. This is a massive X factor here If you talk about late in games and that balance between Nicholas Claxton and Ben Simmons and feeling like you can't have both or maybe even one of them on the court, this affords you the ability to say we have a bigger body that can play at the five, play up to the five if you needed to, positionless basketball, who cares, have him out on the court, and then you mitigate some of the hack of Claxton, hack of Ben. Now, I still think, and we saw this going back these last couple games with Brooklyn, that you can look and see how one, I know it hasn't been perfect, but I believe that Nicholas Claxton's free throw shooting is going to come around to something respectable. I'm not talking about all of a sudden he's going to be a 70% free throw shooter. However, I can see the world where Nick Claxton, who is shooting on the season, probably he's got to be shooting, I think, like his worst. I've always said that he can continue to get better at the free throw line, and he's consistently gotten worse, which he has. He's shooting 46% this year. He shot 58% last year, which was a disaster in the playoffs, where you figure it's just a case of the yips. So again, do I think that he can get to a point where he shoots 55% consistently from the line? Yes, I do. Is that going to be good enough? Maybe, maybe not. But if you think about not having Ben Simmons on the court in late games, having the option of Naz Reid is obviously a significant one. Now, the other thing is the price tag here. And it says, you know, not going to cost a significant amount. We heard, and we'll talk about him here in a second, Serge Ibaka going for a second round pick. Second round picks are really easy to let go of because they are, I mean, by NBA, by draft standards, it's a total crapshoot, right? Developmental prospect. I mean, Kessler Edwards, second round pick. Do we like him? Sure. Did he flash last year? Yes. Has he just been hanging out in the G League and just got called back up? Certainly. So if you're talking about it being a low cost of a second round pick, I like having that as that backup option. And we'll dive in to where his game would benefit more for the Brooklyn Nets in a minute. The other side on Naz Reid, though, is just the competition for it. So if you're the Clippers and you're thinking you got Kawhi Leonard and you got Paul George and you're in the market for him, gosh, do you really want to go that extra layer deeper and make sure that you just solidify this roster and get going in the right direction here? Because we keep talking about where these standings are, teams that are going to be buyers or sellers, and what that can look like. The Clippers right now are the five seed in a very muddled Western Conference where in the blink of an eye, they're a half game up on Dallas and on Phoenix and a game up on the Jazz and just a game and a half up on the Timberwolves and the Warriors and the Thunder for that matter, right? So they are just one game distance between the five seed, game and a half, and the 11th seed right now. That is substantial in terms of how quickly things can either go the right way or the wrong way for you in the Western Conference. Now, the question becomes here, how much does it drum up the price point? Knowing that Reid is going to be a free agent, knowing that he's young, be a controllable potentially asset for a team that gets him, and just that there's competition on the market. This is where the Nets can get into dangerous waters. Now, the Clippers are a bit of a mess from asset standpoint as well, but they can send a player back and maybe a more intriguing player back to the Timberwolves. If you're the Nets, are you saying, hey, you want a Cam Thomas? You know, that we've heard the conversations that D'Angelo Russell, that's someone they're going to be shopping here too. You want to get a younger scoring guard in the backcourt that you can build with this new version of the team that you've put together? I think there's an intriguing element there. So if it's, what is the price point? Cam Thomas and a second? Cam Thomas and a first for Naz Reid? The first round pick, and I don't know what this is going to look like because we've seen the pendulum of prices of the cost of these players swing already in the last couple of weeks. But if you think that Naz Reid could be a part of this team long-term, he's just 23 years old, then giving up a little bit more to get him is okay. It's only if you think this is a second half of the season and playoff run rental, then I'm a little less inspired to give up anything too significant. Although again, Cam and a two, I'm probably more than happy with. If it means solidifying a position, but it again depends on who else and how heavily they're interested. Let's talk about then here in a second, the Serge Ibaka impact, what his skill set means to the Brooklyn Nets potentially, and why obviously there's also another path maybe to picking him up depending on how things shake out here for his tenure with the Bucks. We dive into that in just 1 second. Okay, so the Serge Ibaka of it all for the Brooklyn Nets is looking at a player in a really different way because Naz Reid is not a three-point shooter in any facet of his game. Naz Reid is 6'9", 264. He gives you a little bit of a different type of a defensive skill set as well as offensive. And he gives you probably a more consistent, at this stage of his career, rebounding on both ends of the floor. Now, on the other side of it, when we talk about a Serge Ibaka, who has been reported, obviously the ties go back all the way to their OKC days with Kevin Durant and the potential. He's just been out waiting, wanting, hoping, right? Obviously at 33 years old, big difference. Obviously, we've only seen him in 16 games this year. But if you want to think about just where his career numbers are, the things that you like are obviously the three-point shooting. He's a career 36% three-point shooter. 35 last season, almost 39 the year before. He's been up and down for the most part. 2018-19 with the Toronto Raptors was one of his worst years at just 29%. But by and large, you can trust him to be able to be a guy, first and foremost, that can stretch the floor. Now, if we're talking about the difference between just skill set, between Serge Ibaka and Naz Reid, if Serge Ibaka can provide you a level of consistency that you've seen from him over his career, even being 33 years old now, excuse me, I like the skill set of Serge Ibaka because I want a guy that can stretch the floor when he comes on the court. It also means that if you bring in Serge Ibaka, now all of a sudden, playing the Nicholas Claxton five, Serge Ibaka at the four, or vice versa on the defensive end when you want to switch for assignments, etc. Kevin Durant all the way down to the three, and then look at your backcourt and say Royce O'Neal and Kyrie Irving, or when you want to have Ben Simmons out there. And I mean, there's this world, and I'm throwing out every single combination feasible here, there, and TJ Warren into that mix as well. There is this world. Well, one of the other big areas of need that we'll talk about as the deadline approaches, the backcourt. You can start to mitigate some of that if you have a player or a skill set like Serge Ibaka's who can go ahead and play at the five, can give you some rim protection, can give you some offensive rebounds, can do the things that you want in the traditional sense, and then also stretch the floor for you. Once you do that, you're talking about a guy that, I mean, listen, his, what is he? He's averaged seven rebounds for his career. And I'm going back to last year, which only 19 games that year. So even the 2 years before, remember, right? A lot of injuries for Serge. 2 years prior, when he played with LA in 35 and 41 games. So again, not big sample sizes. The big risk here is whether or not this guy could hold up, right? Or are you getting some version of a Blake Griffin, what he was versus what he is? Five rebounds, though, per game. When he's playing for the Clippers, a little over five, a little over four each time. But if you can get this minute share that when you want to mix and match a little bit, Serge Ibaka offers you a different versatility. My concern is that he doesn't have anything left, right? That's my concern. My concern is that it's LaMarcus Aldridge who comes in, shows something for a little stretch. And then when fans are saying, why aren't we seeing Serge Ibaka more? Because he doesn't have it anymore, right? He doesn't have it on the defensive end, or the injuries play a factor here. I don't know exactly where we think the state of Serge's game is, but he feels like a guy that maybe there's a buyout market chance here, depending on what the interest is. He's a guy that's been said, as I mentioned in the last segment, a second round pick. That's a flyer. You're willing to let this guy go for a flyer. That means that maybe if you wait it out, there's an opportunity to pick him up on the buyout market potentially if the Milwaukee Bucks look to make a move, add a piece, need the roster space, et cetera. You have to wait and see how that plays itself out. From a skill set standpoint, I love it. From an age and, you know, functionality standpoint, I don't know. So it's a little bit interesting. The other interesting part to me is I had talked about Alex Caruso from Chicago, obviously being a really good piece that the Nets would love to add to their backcourt in a big way. Currently, Chicago sits at the 10th seed. They're 22-25. I don't know. They're 6-4 over the last 10. It doesn't sound like they're going to be ready to be big sellers here unless things go wrong in a hurry for them over this next stretch. And again, they've gone 6-4 in their last 10. They're kind of a pendulum swing kind of team, winning. They lost to the Pacers, but won three in a row over Atlanta, Detroit, and Golden State. I don't know if Golden State was actually resting in that particular game, but then lost three against OKC, against Washington, against Boston. Won three in a row prior to that. So they are up and down. You can go all the way through their schedule here and see them winning four, losing three, winning four. Back and forth they go. So now, when we look at their schedule coming up, having just lost to the Pacers, you sit and you think, well, Charlotte, Orlando, very winnable games, right? But if they lose one of those and then they play the Clippers, guess what? Charlotte again. And then they have Portland, San Antonio, Memphis, Brooklyn, Cleveland, and Orlando. The problem is, and that actually went right through the deadline. So up until the deadline for them, the 7th of February, which will be Memphis, they're going to have Charlotte, Orlando, Charlotte, San Antonio. Four games there at a minimum that you feel like are very winnable. And then you have the Clippers, you have Portland, and you'll have Brooklyn on the 9th, so the deadline will have passed. But if they're still treading water in that area, it's going to be hard for me to think that they're sellers. There's other guys like that in the backcourt that I'd like to see the Nets maybe have conversations around. But unfortunately, the teams that are selling don't necessarily have those pieces readily available for the Nets to go and target. The other thing that came out of this, by the way, to touch back into the conversation over on Nets Daily from Net Income, when we talked about what the Nets are thinking here, Zach Lowe said, I think the Nets are going to be really active over the next 2 weeks looking to add another piece. They have picks to trade. They have some mid-size contracts. So again, then the last piece of this is going to be, what do the Nets have on their books and what can they move potentially inside of these? Now, mid-size contracts, that's not going to be a Joe Harris. Mid-size contracts, that means a guy like Seth Curry, who has that $8 million, $9 million hit right now sitting on the books, $8.496 million. That is a mid-size contract. All the lighter side things would be, you know, Patty Mills, certainly 6.4. It's hard for me to think that they would move on from him just because they rewarded him with the contract. And if you're Sean Marks, we all questioned bringing back Patty and maybe not bringing back Bruce Brown. It'd be pretty brutal if you turn around and then you trade him at the deadline. That would be, even if it was for, you know, a price matching standpoint or anything along those lines, that would be pretty difficult. And then everything else beneath that, though, is all $2 million range with Cam, with Dayron, with Sumner, with Markieff, with TJ Warren, Yuta, all those guys, right? Now, you know, are any of those guys potentially players that you would put into the mix if it meant acquiring X? Maybe. I would stay away from any of the guys that they just brought in. Even Markieff Morris, we know they guaranteed the rest of the contract, so it's hard for me to think that those guys, Sumner, Yuta, TJ Warren, like all these guys that they guaranteed the rest of the contracts, it'd be a hard pivot to all of a sudden say within 3 weeks, within a month, we've completely gone the other direction on them. So in that, from that standpoint, it's really Seth Curry. If you talk about mid-sized contracts, yes, Nicholas Claxton falls into that. They're not trading him, or if they do, they might have a revolt on their hands because I'll be outside Barclays Center losing my absolute mind. And then you have Royce O'Neal. Again, he's not a guy that's going anywhere. So then you get up to Joe Harris at the 18.6. So yes, they do have a couple, but realistically it's Seth and then Patty. And those are both backcourt guys. And if you do that, some combination here, in my opinion, Sean Marks is going to have to accomplish. Say it's a Naz Reid, you want to go make that happen, great. But if it means moving out a contract in order to bring that in, and adding a piece to it, or if it's moving a Cam Thomas with it, you're still going to have to find a way to functionally play something in the backcourt, potentially. We talked about ball handling and defensive ability. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it. Now, we've seen starting lineups with Royce O'Neal there. And if the belief is with some functional Naz Reid minutes, and you just kind of make yourself bigger and you live with some of the difficulties, like we remember talking about in previous seasons and even this year, when you have Joe Harris on an assignment against a guard, well, between the size, you know, yes, a little bit bigger so we can stay at least with him or in front of him. We saw this in the Golden State game, right? Curry's going to obviously get past him. But what Joe is trying to accomplish is staying on his hip, playing a little bit behind him, shielding him away from getting to the left side, forcing him into where the help defense was in a lot of those instances. And by the way, Royce O'Neal is a step better, two steps better defensively, three steps, however many. But maybe you live with them playing down on smaller guard scenarios. And by adding a Naz Reid or adding a Serge Ibaka, you have this rotation where you can say, yeah, and we keep funneling you back in towards the basket where the Claxtons, the Reeds and the Ben Simmons of the world try to do some work on the interior to make it more difficult. This is none of it's going to be perfect. But if all indications are the Nets are going to be active, I would expect that to be more than one move. I would expect it to be a backup big and something for the backcourt potentially. People talked about wanting another pure scorer. I don't know if that's high on the list or if they'll be capable of acquiring it, But the big question that it comes back to here is the Nets have some capital they can move and work with. And Doug and I have talked about this. We'll continue to debate it as we go forward. Where do they stand when we look at the idea of the Nets going all in on this season, right? Because then it's the off season. It's the Kyrie contract. It's where is Kevin Durant? It's, you know, how does TJ Warren look? How does Edmund Sumner look? How do all these pieces fit together beyond this season? And how will you be able to retool on the fly in the offseason if needed? Some would say that's for the offseason. And all I care about now is making this team better, keeping ourselves in that four and above seed in the East, and being a team that's pushing for a deep playoff run. And it makes sense, like in a lot of ways, and that makes a ton of sense because it's been far too many seasons of not achieving that goal of a deep playoff run. Sean Marks needs to find a way to move the needle here. And it could be marginal. It might not be exactly what you want, but I think we will see something happen here. We'll come back into, I want to talk about Rui Hachimura. I mentioned him going to the Lakers and just what his skill set is. If the Nets, maybe would that have worked with the Nets? What would that have looked like, et cetera? So there is going to be some of that too. What else happened out there on the market? And then should the Nets have been involved in that? So we'll do a little bit of retroactive grading depending on who gets moved here as well. We've got the Philadelphia 76ers. Wednesday night, post-game coverage coming at you on YouTube. Be sure you get over there, as Doug would tell you. Turn on those alerts so you know when we're going live. You get us on that podcast feed. We're breaking it all down. And as we always say, or as I always say, with no Doug Norrie here, there is no quote short of simply saying, I miss my friend, and I can't wait until he's back so we can keep talking all things Brooklyn Nets basketball.